welcome to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, hosted on the Daily Grind Cycling Journal. Visit us on the web at tailwind-coaching.com or like us on Facebook at Tailwind Coaching. And now, your host, Coach Rob.
Coach Rob back here. Another edition, Tailwind Coaching Podcast. I have been off for a couple weeks. I've been not podcasting for a few weeks. And as some of you can no doubt tell, part of the reason I'm not podcasting is my voice is a little bit odd at the moment. I've actually been sick for the last couple of weeks with a head cold, sinus infection, and chest cold. So I've finally been able to just have enough time in between coughing fits that I can actually put together a podcast. And on today's podcast, we're going to discuss one of the new trends that seems to be sweeping the bicycling industry right now, and that is the concept of gravel grinding and gravel riding. We're going to talk about the concept of a gravel bike, which many companies are actually getting themselves into right now. We're going to talk about the differences between a road bike, a gravel bike, the dedicated gravel bike, in fact, and your traditional cyclocross bike. We'll try to discuss and delve into which tool fits each job the best and what would be the best thing for any of you out there who are looking to add some off-road or gravel adventures to your training. And we'll talk about a few of the skills, tips, and tricks that will help make your dirt road journeys a little bit more fun and a little safer, regardless of which bike you happen to choose. So, before we get that started, I'm going to do a few quick announcements. Number one, please go ahead, go on to iTunes there, and feel free to rate this podcast. Rate it 5 stars if you really like it. If you hate it, rate it 1 star, but at least tell me why you hate it. if my voice is that annoying to listen to, you know, that's great, but not constructive criticisms for me. I would like to try and reach as many people as I can, get as many people involved, and, you know, just be able to spread this information and things to people all around the world. Remember, I don't get paid for any of this. This is just something I do out of the goodness of my heart, and I enjoy doing because I enjoy, you know, helping people to improve their cycling and expand their cycling horizons. So, the more people that rate, the more people I reach, and the more motivation I have to continue producing these podcasts, again, provided I am not dead on the couch, coughing my lungs up, as it may be. All right, so go ahead over to iTunes. There's a link, if you're listening to this on the website, there's a link in the post. Head on over to iTunes and rate this podcast. Additionally, if you're looking to get a hold of me, either for one-on-one coaching or for questions, coachrobdc@gmail.com, or you can find me on the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, or you can find me on the website at tailwind-coaching.com. In the upper right of any of those pages, there are probably a dozen different ways to get a hold of me. So, that being said, what have I been doing for the last 3 weeks? Well, quick training update. I have been doing almost no training whatsoever. It is that time of year during which I take time off. I sit in front of the TV. I indulge in craft beer. I brew some beer. And I put on a few extra pounds while I watch the Eagles lose almost every football game they partake in. However nice it is to watch the Giants lose as well. But I digress. So training has been very, very, very sporadic at this point. I have been doing nothing more than mostly just fun rides, mostly zone two kind of things like that. Just trying to get some base miles in before the winter really hits and I need to really start getting ready for next season. I am also in the process of putting together my training plans for next season. I'm putting together my racing schedule, and I'm also going to be working on a few new training plans for next season. Number one out of those is going to be the bat and kill plan. I don't currently have bat and kill on my training schedule this year yet. I'm very seriously considering not doing it. I love the race. The race does not love me. And every time I do actually go to bat and kill and race bat and kill, it ends up just kicking my ass and pretty much ruining the rest of my season. So I'm very, very skeptical of doing that again this year. However, I am going to have my typical training plan available for bat and kill. So look for that sometime after the route is released. I'm not going to have it up available before the route is released because supposedly the route itself is being changed and being changed fairly significantly. So that is also something to keep in mind. Otherwise, downloadable training plans. I am going to have a holiday special coming up in the next couple months, so keep an eye out for that. That'll be available on Twitter and on Facebook, and also be announced through the Tailwind Coaching Podcast future episodes. Other things that have been going on. Those of you who have been following my website at tailwind-coaching.com, you know that I've gone through yet another Quark power meter. I believe I'm on my fourth one at this time. This time it was not a water-related failure. It was a strain gauge failure. Back in on Labor Day, I raced a Tour of Basking Ridge. Spun the cranks backwards. I got one single reading of 3,800 watts while I was basically standing still. And then the little red LED on my SRAM Red Quark came on solidly, which usually means a fault of some kind. So I had no power throughout the race. I called Quark on Tuesday, got it shipped out, got a new one back. The new one seems to be functioning just fine. No problems with it. Since then, I've also killed yet another Garmin heart rate strap. I switched to a Wahoo fitness strap, which I'll have a review coming out on that one fairly soon, but the Wahoo fitness strap is a much nicer strap, much cheaper than the Garmin premium strap, and just seems to be a little bit more robust. So in the meantime, that one is sufficing very well. Additionally, I have downloaded the latest Garmin Edge 500 software. It seems to work actually pretty well, which is a rarity for Garmin software updates. The new firmware has a feature when it detects a power meter, it allows you to go directly to the calibration page, which is a very, very welcome change. I very, very much appreciate that change. So Garmin, congratulations. You finally put out a firmware update that actually works and it actually doesn't suck. Provides something very useful for us. So much appreciated, Garmin. Thank you. So, all those little updates and all that little crap out of the way, let's get to the meat of today's topic, the gravel bike revolution. All right, on to the gravel bike revolution. What is the difference between a gravel bike, between a cross bike, between a road bike? Well, first of all, I think we have to understand why the gravel bike is becoming so popular. Events like the Dirty Kanza and D2R2, the Deerfield Dirt Road Randonnée, are becoming extremely popular. Cyclocross in itself is becoming extremely popular. However, just like most formats of racing, cyclocross is indeed a race, and many, many people do not really have the motivation to register, to go out there, and to put themselves out there competing in a true racing setting. Okay, so many, many people really like, stupid mic, hang on, I'm going to move my mic a little bit here. So many people really enjoy the randonnée type of adventure that comes along with some of these events. the Rafa Gentleman's Race, for example, this past year was held in northern New Jersey and central New Jersey, as well as eastern Pennsylvania, and it undertook a lot of dirt and gravel roads. So there is definitely a precedence for these kinds of events, and it seems only a natural progression that once these kind of events take off, we suddenly start to see an influx of bicycles and equipment really set up and designed for, specifically, for these kinds of events. And if Interbike is any indication, Interbike this year is any indication, we are in for a huge influx of dirt road specific type equipment in the next year to year and a half. There have been at least a half a dozen bikes that I have seen on various reports that are designed specifically for dirt road type riding. Names are escaping me now. The BMC Gran Fondo GF01 is specifically one of those bikes, and that's a disc bike. A Giant has one. I feel like it's the Redoubt or something like that. 2-9er or 29er or whatever they are, or 9er, I believe it is, has one of their variety of dirt road type bikes. And all the other companies are starting to come out with something very similar. But really, what makes these bikes any different from your typical road bike? Well, if we look at a road bike, a typical road racing bike, something you could both ride on a Sunday group ride or take out and race in the local crit series, you're looking at a bike that has relatively steep angles, a bike that is fairly stable at high speeds, and to really make handling on a road bike effective, you need to understand and be able to use body language to maneuver the bike underneath you and maneuver the bike through either a field of riders or a field of debris or down the road in general. Typically on road bikes, especially racing bikes, you are going to have a very stretched out low position with a relatively long cockpit. That would mean a rather wider bar set, a longer stem set, and a stem that has a, let's say, either less of a rise or even some cases a negative rise. I've seen a number of criterium racers with negative rise stems. Interesting as though it may be, it doesn't make for a very comfortable or all-day type position. But the norm for a road or racing bike is indeed for that longer, lower position. Additionally, things you will find on a road bike, if we're going to talk about it as the sort of gold standard for geometry, you're going to find a smaller tire clearance on there. Typically, you will be able to put 25 millimeter tires on a road bike. Some road bikes, you may be able to fit a 28 millimeter tire, but that is entirely dependent on the manufacturer and on their tire clearances. You will also see generally a low to low-ish bottom bracket, which moves the center of gravity down into the frame a little bit more. And you will also see a caliper brake system. For the most part, there is that silly disc brake, quote, revolution, if you could see me right now. I'm doing the air quotes. Revolution that puts disc brakes on road bikes. That's an entirely different podcast, maybe one that I'll talk about and tackle in the future. But needless to say, typically you're going to find on a road bike a caliper-type brake. So let's contrast that with what most people would associate with dirt, when that would be a cross bike or a cyclocross bike. So why don't we just take a cyclocross bike on our dirt road excursions? Well, cyclocross bikes traditionally, and pretty much to this day, have been basically designed for cyclocross racing. Now, cross racing has a very distinct set of requirements. Such that require the bike to be able to handle very slow speeds, very tight turns in very slow terrain, things like that. what that means is you have a bike with very steep angles to make it extremely responsive and very quick handling in those tight, slow speed situations. It's a very stable bike at those lower speeds, but as the speed increases, that bike's stability is almost exponentially decreased with the increase in speed. All right. Cross riders typically have a mid-length to a longer cockpit. As it's a race bike, you're looking for a little bit more agile, quick handling. The one thing they do have going for them is the cantilever or disc brakes and the huge tire clearance. You can put up to 38 millimeter tires on most cross bikes. Note that it's not legal to do so in most sanctioned cyclocross races, but it can be done for training purposes. The cantilever or disc brake option is what really allows you to have those huge tire clearances. You don't have to have a tire that either fits into a fork or, in some cases, fits inside a brake caliper as you would on a road bike. And the other consideration is the high bottom bracket on the cyclocross bike. So that is almost the polar opposite in geometry of a road bike. For the most part, and the intended use of a cyclocross bike almost precludes it from being a long distance, long duration comfort type of bike. Even though it's designed for dirt, gravel, grass, things like that, it's really not designed for those randonnée, those D2R2 or Dirty Kanza kind of situations. So that would be why the industry at large has decided the gravel bike should occupy its own little niche in the market. Now, how does the gravel bike vary from the cyclocross bike? How does it vary from a road bike? The gravel bike itself is a very, very relaxed style of geometry. Think of an endurance type road bike. Now, an endurance road bike would take that regular racing bike formula and sort of stretch the angles out. A little bit slacker angles, a little bit shorter stem, a little more upright position. Think of an endurance type road bike and slacken it even further. It's a bike which will be much more stable at high speed without a whole lot of attention or input from the rider, which, while you're riding on gravel, that may be the best possible thing. In many cases, people who are riding on gravel are just trying to survive the experience, let alone actually make something huge happen out of it. Okay, but the typical gravel bike that we're seeing now is a big tire clearance frame, typically disc brake. Although I have seen a few that have caliper brakes on them. The lower bottom bracket that you'd associate with a road bike itself. However, a shorter cockpit to make it more upright and to sort of mitigate the handling, make the handling a little bit more neutral as opposed to that sort of razor sharp handling that you would get out of a like a criterium racing kind of bike. Compared to a cyclocross bike, you're at the complete opposite end of the spectrum. It's the similarity between a cross bike and a gravel bike is about the same as between a road bike and a city cruiser. Okay, there's really no comparison between the two. So the big question, though, with all of that in mind, with all the geometry discussion and all that stuff out of the way, what would be the tool for the job if you are looking to do gravel type events? If you're looking to do something like the D2R2, what bike are you going to go out and are you going to purchase? Or what bike are you going to pull off the wall of your garage in order to go out and basically take part in one of these long distance gravel events? Similarly, if you're simply going to add some adventure into your daily, your daily 30, 40, 50 mile ride, can you take any of these bikes and have the same experience with them? Well, I think it really comes down to which tool is the most appropriate for the job. And of course, I'll have to clear my throat here. I still got a little bit of something going on from being sick, but at least I'm here talking with you. Which tool is the most appropriate for the job? That really depends on what job you are asking your bike to do. Okay, are you out there? Are you going to race the D2R2? Or are you simply going to add 3 or 4 miles of dirt roads, gravel roads, unpaved roads to your regular 30, 40, 50 mile Sunday ride? Well, here are a few things to keep in mind. Road bikes themselves have really been used on all terrain. Okay, a great example, if you look at some of the events here in technically Western New Jersey, Central New Jersey, we have the famous Hell of Hunterdon, which takes place in the end of March. A 78-mile, it's not a race, but a lot of people treat it as a race. Hell of Hunterdon is ridden on road bikes. That has about 15 miles of dirt on it. Obviously, the Tour of Battenkill is got a number of unpaved or dirt sections on it, and everybody races that. That being a race, everybody's on their race bikes for that. Although the trend lately has been for larger volume tires at Battenkill and at Hell of Hunterdon, Fool's Classic, and D2R2, I know of people who have taken road bikes to that. The thing to keep in mind is a road bike can go anywhere. You can put a road bike on asphalt, you can put it on gravel, you can put it on tar and chip seal, as I discovered, as I ran through during one of my rides last week. Although cleaning tar off a frame is an absolute bitch, so just keep that in mind. You can take a road bike off-road through pretty much anything except single track, or maybe double track, cheap trails, things like that. But for the most part, a road bike will be a do-it-all bike. And now a lot of people will say, but my road bike, it's, you know, I baby it so much, I don't want to get chips on it, it might break it. And shut up. I'm riding a Look 585. That's the same frame that Tor Hushov used to sprint on and used to ride Paris-Roubaix on. Don't tell me that you're going to break one of your bikes when the pros are using exactly the same bikes over terrain that's a hell of a lot worse than what you're dealing with. All right, go compare your local dirt and gravel road to the cobbles of Paris-Roubaix, and you tell me what you think could be worse. I would pretty much guarantee that Paris-Roubaix will put your local dirt road to shame. And if the pros are not breaking their equipment at Paris-Roubaix, you're definitely not going to break it by going off-road with it, or off-paved roads with it. All right, that's my one rant on the dirt virgins who are afraid of getting a little dust on their on their carbon. Okay, so the next thing, the next part here, that digressing from that, we've already established road bikes will go anywhere. The road bike is probably the only one of those which I would take, or I would recommend taking, to a race or a criterium, a road race, anything of that nature. I certainly would not want to take a gravel bike to Tour the Battenkill. I don't know that I'd want to take a road bike to D2R2, even though it is possible. But I certainly would not want to be taking a cross bike to any kind of endurance things. So, if you're intending to race, even if you're going to do a couple of races a year, I would certainly think about doing or purchasing or utilizing a road bike. And you can always add larger tires or different wheels or things like that to moderate some of the feel from unpaved roads. All right, so that is something to keep in mind. Cyclocross bikes pretty much excel at cyclocross racing. And that's about it. I know some people have ridden cyclocross bikes on longer rides. I know a few people who, if given the chance, if they only had one bike, would only keep a cross bike. I personally do not find them to be the best tool for the job. They're sort of like a Swiss Army knife. They'll work okay for a lot of things, but they won't do very much good except in one situation. It's like a Swiss Army knife. It's good for a knife. It's got all the other stuff on it. You never use the other stuff. You use it for the knife. Cyclocross bike you use to race cross. Okay, that's the take home here. the gravel bike, well, it's something of an endurance bike, has an endurance bike geometry, would probably serve as an excellent, excellent all-around bike for almost everybody. Again, unless you are looking at doing road racing or something of that nature. If you're going to do no road racing, you're not interested, you have no desire to race, what have you, the gravel bike may well be the option for you. With things like wide tire clearance, the ability to put very, very large tires on it, you have a high potential for comfort. With disc brakes on the bike, you have it's much easier for new riders to really get a good feel for riding and not have to worry about... I may sound like an ass, but the finer points and the finer skills of learning to brake on caliper brakes properly. New riders don't take that as a slam. It's just something that takes a little bit of time to develop, especially on carbon rims. If your ride comes with carbon rims, you'll notice the difference between the disc and the caliper brake, and you'll notice the simplicity in the disc brake compared to the caliper brake in terms of stopping ability. My ultimate solution here, with all those things being considered, would be a, if everybody was able to do it, would be great. But my ultimate solution would be a custom road bike with wider tire clearances and basically geometry that's about the same as a regular road bike. Take a regular road bike, add the ability to put wide tires on it, and I believe that would be my solution to everything. For those of you who who really don't have the ability to go custom and you're buying off the rack, it's not impossible to ride a bike on dirt and gravel roads with regular road bike tires. I rode Battenkill this past year on 21 millimeter tubulars and carbon rims. I had no problems. I know a lot of people who rode 23 millimeter tires. I know a number of people who rode 25 millimeter tires on carbon wheels. There's nothing that says that you cannot ride a road bike on dirt roads. I've ridden my 21 millimeter tubulars for an entire season, only because I hate switching wheels. When I'm racing pretty much every weekend, every other weekend, I hate switching wheels, and I hate switching brake pads. So I have been simply training on my racing wheels for the entirety of the season. And really, there's no issue with that over any kind of terrain, really. So the ultimate solution, if you have it, is to go custom with the wide tire clearance. If you're buying off the rack, honestly, if you are even remotely skilled or looking to race, I would go with a road bike. I do believe that the slack geometry and the disc brake and the huge tires, etc., really encourages or discourages the building of skills that are sort of essential to good, safe riding, safe racing, etc. Okay. I believe that the gravel bike, having ridden bikes like that in the past, the slack handling really does cause the slack angles, I should say, really cause handling to suffer and really sort of offers up a very, very dead feel, which I myself am not a fan of. And I know many, many people are not really a fan of. Most people are looking for something that's a little bit more precise. The analogy of a scalpel versus a sledgehammer is somewhat apropos in that respect. So, with all the bike talk out of the way and the suggestion for what would work the best in what situation, let's talk about the thing that really will make or break any of your gravel grinding days, and that is going to be your dirt road skills. All right, I think it's extremely apropos that we are talking dirt road and gravel skills at this time of year. The spring and the fall are my favorite times to be hitting anything that's off-road. Usually, dirt, gravel, things like that tend to be very rural roads. In the fall, those are absolutely some of the most beautiful rides that you can possibly be on. The problem is, even if you're well-equipped equipment-wise to deal with dirt and gravel roads, there is definitely a certain part of the skill set that really needs to be addressed in order to safely ride these roads and to have a lot of fun doing so. And that dirt road mentality is something that is a big problem. I mentioned before, I've been on and I've led group rides that do dirt road segments, and many people seem to be bothered by them. Many people seem to be afraid of them. They're afraid that their bike will fall apart or that they will crash or what have you. There's a couple of cardinal rules when you are dealing with dirt roads that you need to take to heart and keep in mind. Those are the get back, get low, stay seated, and go rules. And that's essentially what I call them. Now, I remember I reviewed these rules and I posted about these rules a number of years ago. So somewhere back in my archives, you're going to have something about riding dirt roads. And I will see if I can link that, if I can remember to link that when I write up the summary of this podcast. But those rules are really the cardinal key to having a good gravel grinder. And if we go through those one at a time, the number one thing to remember is to get back. Now, what do I mean by getting back? Well, when you start hitting soft terrain, when you start hitting dirt, you hit gravel, you hit unpaved roads, you hit anything where your traction is less than ideal, the best place for you to be is at the back of the saddle with your weight centered over the drive wheel. And that's the rear wheel for those of you who aren't quite following, which shouldn't be any of you really, but honestly, if that's the case, you know, I digress. Again, the back wheel is the wheel that does all of the forward propulsion on a bicycle. And you want to keep your weight over that wheel as much as possible. The contact patch on that rear tire compared to a mountain bike is extremely small. The more dirt, gravel, or other debris in the road, the less effort it takes to overcome the friction between the tire and the road and cause the tire to slip. Now, that applies both for pedaling, while you're pedaling, or while you're cornering, or anything else. So, while you are pedaling, you want to keep yourself way to the back of the saddle. That will also give you the most stable position in terms of unweighting the rear wheel, unweighting the front wheel, so that you can sort of float over segments of deeper, thicker dirt or gravel. If you want to do a test, go out into a sandy area, start riding, and suddenly throw all of your weight onto the handlebars. I will wager your tire will dig in, and you will find yourself laying on your back with the bike on top of you, and you're going to wonder what the hell just happened. Road tires, being very thin, will tend to dig into softer terrain, and they will tend to come to a halt much quicker in softer terrain. So being to the back of the saddle really, really helps to prevent that from happening. Now, in terms of cornering, while you are on dirt and gravel roads. Remember that you do not have the same amount of traction that you do on most normal asphalt roads. You want to keep your outer leg or your outer pedal in the 6 o'clock position, put all of your weight onto that outer pedal and thereby through the wheels. While cornering, you want to keep your weight as balanced as possible between the front and rear tires. Too much weight on the back tire will allow the front to wash out on you. Too much weight on the front will allow the rear to fishtail. It's a very, very fine, delicate balance in cornering on dirt roads, and it's something that needs a lot of practice. And it also requires a lot of confidence, by the way. But we'll get to that in just a minute. The main thing to remember, though, is if you are going in a straight line and you've got the gas on, you want to be to the back of the saddle because that gives you the most traction. All right? So that covers the get back portion of the skills. The second part of the skill drills that, or the skills that you need to make your gravel grinder successful, is the concept of get low. And no, I don't mean shorty got low, 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 or any of that kind of stuff. Getting low means that you need to get your hands into the drops. Why do you need your hands in the drops? Well, you want your center of gravity to be as low as possible. You want to have the absolute most control possible. If you think of your hand positions on your bike, having your hands up on the hoods is what I would consider an awkward handshake. You have control. You have the ability to shift and to brake, etc., etc. But your hand and grip is extremely awkward. You do not have a really solid grip on the bar. Now, if you have your hand in the drop, you can brake and shift with one finger while having your thumb and three other fingers wrapped around one single bar in a manner during which, a manner which basically your hand has a high amount of grip strength. On the hoods, your hand and fingers are in several different anatomical positions. You don't have a lot of grip strength on the hoods. In the drops, you have an extremely good grip. The bonus of having your hands in the drops is you can really, you don't need a lot of grip. You can really handle the bike with a very relaxed grip, which will allow you some shock absorption through your hands, wrists, elbows, and shoulders, while not having to worry about your hands slipping off the hoods or something of that nature. Remember Jens Voigt's crash in the Tour de France a few years ago? He took his hand off the hood to reach for the drop so that he could be more stable on a descent, missed the drop, and crashed on his face. I think that was 2009, maybe. One of my listeners, hopefully you're listening to this, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but that was the one where Jens crashed on his face, went to the hospital, and almost immediately tweeted a picture of himself with a thumbs up saying that he'll be back again. He's a tough mother, man. Love Jens Voigt. But anyway, hands in the drops. When you're on the dirt, your hands should be in the drops. You can shift, brake, and do anything else you need from the drops. It's the most stable riding position, whether you are descending or climbing even, or just mowing down a straight dirt road. Alternatively, some of the things you may have seen from Paris-Roubaix and other spring classics races on TV, you will see guys get their hands to either side of the stem, drop their elbows nice and low, and start hammering it. That position works pretty well if you are climbing. It allows you to slide way to the back of the seat, the back of your saddle. It allows you to stay nice and low, keep the front wheel down, as dirt roads typically have extremely, extremely high gradients, especially on the climbs. But I would not use that for any kind of general riding or riding in a pack. Mainly because you do not have a lot of control. You don't have any ability to brake. And unless you are on Shimano's electronic, or maybe Campy if they have it, you have no shifting capabilities from the position with your hands on the tops next to the stem. All right, so that covers the get low part of our little mnemonic. Remember, it's a get back, get low, stay seated will be our third part of this. And the main reason to stay seated is, again, traction. Traction is at a premium on dirt roads. Staying seated gives you the most traction on that rear wheel. If you do need to stand up to climb, if you're like me, you like to climb out of the saddle, make sure you keep all of your weight rearward. In fact, the nose of that saddle should be basically brushing your thighs, the inside of your thigh, when you are standing up on every pedal stroke in the dirt. A note about staying seated and about pedaling and about climbing. If you are riding on dirt, trust me on this, shift to one gear harder than you normally would. So if you're normally in like a 53-18 and you're pedaling at 90 RPM, for example, shift to a 53-16 or a 53-15 and drop your cadence to 78 to 80, somewhere in that neighborhood. The additional tension will help prevent the rear wheel from spinning out, and it will help to allow you to power through things a little bit better. Remember, dirt roads have a lot more resistance than your standard paved asphalt road does. And the additional chainring tension, the additional pedal tension will help you immensely. So, three of those down. Get back, get low, stay seated. And the last one, obviously, is go. And as we just talked about, you want that additional gear or two with a lot more pedal tension. And that will help to really decrease the chance that you will break the rear wheel free, spin the rear wheel, and find yourself having to dismount or even worse, crash. Okay? So that is a really, really key thing to do. Keep your legs moving at all times. Don't stop and coast. Remember that you will slow down a lot faster on dirt roads than you do on asphalt. You have to really be cognizant of your cadence, of your pedal tension, etc., etc. Now, the biggest thing, you've got your four things. You've got your get back, get low, stay seated, and go little mnemonic. You've got your little reminder there. The biggest thing that you can have that makes your gravel grinder a good experience and a fun experience is confidence. Trust in your bike. Remember, I talked about the pros are riding the exact same thing you are over terrain that's far worse. Trust in your bike. Trust in your equipment. Trust that your tires are not going to slide out from underneath you. All right. Don't forget, if you're planning on a lot of dirt and gravel roads, you may want to lower your tire pressure. Riding on dirt and gravel and unpaved stuff is very similar to riding on wet or, let's call it slick for any reason, it could be slick roads. So lower the tire pressure a few PSI and actually have confidence in your ability to handle what the road is throwing at you right now. Believe me, you will be able to handle it. If you're a rider halfway decent or half worth their salt, you'll be able to handle it without a problem. All right. Confidence in your skills is absolutely paramount. Once you trust your bike, you have to be able to trust yourself. Know that if something is coming up, you'll be able to handle it. If you find yourself in a situation where you feel you're over your head, the simple option is just slow down. You can still pick your way through any kind of situation on a road bike or on an unpaved road that you would be able to on an asphalt road or anything of that nature. This is not the same as mountain biking, folks. Remember that. In mountain biking, many times, if you slow down to pick your way through something, you'll end up crashing or dismounting. Speed is almost an essential when you're mountain biking. On a road bike, you can afford to slow down and stop and smell the roses a little bit, especially on those unpaved segments. All right. So keep that in mind. So that being said, the most important thing of that entire discussion is have confidence in your skills and keep your head, you know, screwed on tight. Keep your wits about you while you're on those unpaved segments. And believe me, your gravel grinders will be just fine. They will be extremely fun, and they will be something that you'll want to add to your regular routine probably throughout the season. And I'll be back in just a moment to wrap up. All right, I realize that I've been yapping for about 45 minutes here. So thank you all for listening. If you have any questions on dirt road riding, on the gravel grinding concept, or on any of the skills that we've presented here, or that I've presented here, feel free to get a hold of me. You can find me on the website. Go ahead over to tailwind-coaching.com. You can find me any number of ways to get a hold of me there. You can get me Twitter. You can get me on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page, which is probably one of the best ways to get a hold of me, by the way. You can also find me via email, coachrobdc@gmail.com. And over on the website, you can find a number of different ways to follow me, whether it be Strava, whether it be on Twitter, on Facebook, whether it be on any of the podcast sites like Blueberry, Podbean, or Stitcher. Stitcher Radio, by the way, an excellent little app. If you're not getting it, getting this podcast through iTunes, go ahead and get it there. Feel free to rate me there as well. And again, like I just said, go ahead over to iTunes, go over to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast, the Daily Grind Cycling Journal. Go ahead and rate that up 5 stars. The more people that rate it, the more people I get to reach, the more motivation I have to talk to you on a more regular basis, and the more chance I will have to bring guests on to discuss various comings and goings in the cycling industry. So that's about all for me today. Again, head on over to the website or get a hold of me. If you have questions on coaching or coaching issues or one-on-one coaching requests, go ahead and get a hold of me at coachrobdc@gmail.com. Coaching-wise, I have 1 slot available. Actually, I'm going to have 2 slots available coming up very soon here for the coming season. So now's the time to start thinking about it and start getting your ducks in a row for the next racing season. That being said, Bat and Kill Plan will go up shortly after the route is released, so look out for that. And there will be a Tailwind Coaching coupon coming up soon for the holidays for those of you who are looking for just plain old downloadable training plans. Everybody else out there, everybody who's listened to the last 47 minutes of discussion, I want to thank you for listening. I want you all to ride safe. I want you to ride happy. I want you to get strong. I want you to go out, and I want you to go kill some gravel. Have a great gravel grinder this weekend, and I will be talking to you all real soon.